The next person that I have signed up, well, does anybody need a break at this point? It's nearly 1 o'clock.
I have to also say, Mr. McAllister has indicated that he'll be leaving the meeting at 2 p.m., giving us an hour, and maybe wish to have you guys press on as much as you can.
Yeah, we lose quorum.
And Mr. Chairman, this is Mona Baskin, the independent advisor, and at this time, may I please be excused for the meeting?
Yes, and thank you for all your help.
All right, thank you. Thank you, members of the board. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Now, Honor, we're talking about 6B12, or have we resolved? Okay, so we got Clark. Okay, so our next item would be 6B12. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, so we will proceed to 6B12.
And it should be Mr. Khalifa. Mr. Khalifa, are you still present? And star 6 to unmute yourself if you are.
Okay, this is case number P20043, agenda item 6B12. The respondent is Khalidat Khalifa, PE Mechanical, number 52677. Respondent firm is KK Engineering, LLC. Number 17120 expired. Synopsis of the complaint is on March 24, 2020. The board received a complaint alleging the respondent, a registered mechanical engineer, signed and sealed electrical engineering plans for the Chavez Plaza project in Yuma, Arizona, on or about January 29, 2019. They were technically deficient in relation to fault current calculations, available fault current, panel board specifications, panel schedule rating, conductors, and grounding and bonding. It is further alleged that the respondent and respondent firm engaged in practice engineering without firm registration with the board. The board records show that the respondent's firm registration expired on August 31st, 2012. The investigative conclusions are that the respondent has violated statutes ARS 32128C4 and AAC R43301-6, ARS 32141, ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R43301, and the staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $1,000, cost of investigation for 419. We do have a signed consent agreement, and I will open the matter up for discussion. We do have investigator Luera Orlean here to answer any questions for the board members on the phone.
Mr. Chair, this is Alejandro Angel, and I'll explain why I wanted to pull this out of consent, if that's okay.
Sure, please do.
My worry is, as you'll see, this was a project where a mechanical engineer did electrical engineering. And when we went through the conclusions of law, one of the conclusions was that he failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill. Yet when we issued the order and the consent, there's nothing about restriction of electrical practice or training or education or anything else. It's all, you know, reprimand, administrative penalty, and cost of investigation. So I think the consent needs to go significantly further and prevent this person from practicing electrical engineering unless he gets registered. When I read the EAC, they said, yeah, he you know, didn't get this right, but we can tell he knows electrical engineering. That's all well and good. He can know all the electrical engineering he wants, but if he doesn't have the registration, he can't be practicing it. And it sounds like he's been practicing for over 10 years. I can't support this consent. I would send it back to staff to negotiate terms that have to do with the technical skill, restriction of practice, or similar on electrical engineering.
Ms. Orlean?
So at the EAC meeting, they asked him questions regarding electrical engineering. He has been practicing for 34 years. They asked him questions specifically regarding electrical engineering, and he was able to answer those questions. And he is actually on the line. If you would like to speak with him, he should be.
Sure, but that doesn't change the fact. I don't care if he knows electrical engineering. He's not registered as one.
This is Clarence McAllister. I concur with Dr. Alejandro. I believe that he does need to register as electrical engineer in order to practice electrical engineering as well.
In rule, there's, you know, 301 is a provision that allows the cross practice of different branches of engineering as long as they're qualified. So the issue here is whether or not he is qualified based on this case. And I think that's EAC.
Mr. Powell, are you referring to incidental practice?
No, I'm referring to, I think it's R430-301-17.
We're looking it up, Alejandro.
Thank you, guys.
18.
Yeah, I can read it out loud. A registered professional engineer may accept professional engagements or assignments of branches of engineering other than the branch in which the registrant has demonstrated proficiency by registration, but only if the registration has the education, technical knowledge, or experience to perform such engagements or assignments.
That's kind of broad and wide open.
Yeah.
Jeez.
We did find that he didn't do the electrical engineering correctly in this case.
Correct, but overall the EAC members felt that he did possess the technical knowledge and the required education and training to be able to conduct or do electrical engineering, but he fell down in this case. I mean, that's coming out of the EAC.
I understand, Doug. I'm just still not buying it, because then everybody has carte blanche to say, no, I know that, I just screwed up this time, but I can practice any branch of engineering. I think, unless you're registered, I would presume that you know it, especially when you come and have an issue. I mean, if he knows it, why doesn't he get registered?
And Dr. Angel, to support your point, I also raised a question about the EAC doing an evaluation on his skill level. Whereas I think that maybe they're just limited to investigating the complaint itself. Is that a shared thought? Do you share the same kind of feeling, or am I getting a little off base?
No, I think you're right, Mr. Chair. EATs don't give the PE exams. So
I think it's helpful information, and I think it might be useful for the EAC to understand what level of competency may or may not be there. But I don't think that I'm just cautious to use them as a vetting agency or a vetting group when they don't normally do the reviews for tests, or they don't do testing.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, to go further, I mean, I'm reading the rule that we discussed, and I think it's under number 17. It says, you know, that they can do it if they're qualified or experienced to perform the work. That's A, and B is also a requirement. The work is exempt under ARS 32143, and 32143 is the one that that you can do it only to the extent that the person is qualified, and to the extent that the work is necessary and incidental to the work of the registrant's profession on a specific project. So basically, if you're doing a huge mechanical engineering project and you need to do something small electrical, you can do it. That's incidental. But he cannot accept electrical engineering engagements without being registered. And maybe that's something that Mr. Donald can help clarify, but I don't think he can do.
I think 17 goes
electrical engineering
category, not financial engineering.
Right. I think there are a couple of different areas here, Dr. Angel, if I may. There, 17 carves out an exception, but it also specifies except for below and in subsections 18 and 19. And 18, the question is not really going to be the size of the work done or the job done, but rather the question is going to be if the registrant has the education, technical knowledge, or expertise to perform such engagements or assignments. That would appear to provide an exception if there's a demonstration of that, and if the person is registered in one profession with the board. So the board would have to do a little bit more of an inquiry than I think you're thinking on a certain level. The board would actually have to, under the rule, make a determination that the registrant didn't have the education, technical knowledge, or experience to perform the engagement or assignment that they performed. So there would be a little bit more of an inquiry under that. But there are a couple of exceptions. 17 has 18 and 19 also as exceptions. So I think 18.
And one more question, Mr. Donnelly. I mean, if the actual statute says that you can only engage in another category to the extent that it's incidental and to the extent that you're qualified. I mean, doesn't the statute trump the rule if they're contradicting each other? The rule is allowing you to practice, but the statute says no, only to the extent that it's incidental.
Yes, absolutely. The statute is going to trump the rule, and I would have to go back and look at how the rule was promulgated. I'm honestly not... I mean, if you want to get into the statutory construction of it, I'd be more than happy to look at that for next time. That's a little deeper than I am really prepared to go at the moment. I would have to look at the basis under which this rule was set up. All I'm saying for the moment is that under the rules under 17, it sets up 18 and 19 as well as providing exceptions. If you would like, I'd be more than happy to look at for the next board meeting. I'd be happy to look at the statutory basis there and see and give the board legal advice on perhaps the statutes and rules allowing for exceptions to registration. But I'm not sure I'm ready to go quite that far yet today. So I do have.
That's fair. I guess my point is the same. Is the EAC, as the chairman said, is not the one who determines if he's qualified or not. And in fact, the evidence is that he might not be because he had an issue with technical knowledge and skill. So I would ask that we renegotiate the consent agreement to require something associated with electrical engineering restriction of practice unless he can pass the PE exam. If he does that, then we know he is qualified.
So are you crafting a motion, Dr. Angel?
If we need a motion, yeah. I guess the motion is to reject the consent agreement as signed and direct staff to renegotiate another consent agreement that includes provisions to address the technical knowledge and skill finding problem.
And I'll second that motion, and I'd like to add a question for staff, if you know it. Were the members of the EAC electrical engineers or mechanical engineers or civil engineers?
They were electrical.
They were electrical engineers, so they may have very well known the craft and would have been experts in that field. So that, okay. I think that was a good selection on the part. So we have a motion and second to reject and get some detail in the electrical engineering category. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes 6B12.
Let's go to E. Oh, we got Alejandro on the...
Can I comment, please?
What? Hello?
Can I come in?
Yes, please do. And who are you?
I'm Khalid Khalifa.
He just finished up his...
Just finished the case. Okay, please comment,
yeah,
though.
Because I asked a couple of times, nobody responded to me.
We didn't hear you, sir. I'm very sorry about that. Please, please, we want to hear your comments.
Yes, actually I'm qualified and I have the technical knowledge. I have more than 33 years of experience. And also the allegation about my calculation was incorrect. I sent to Orlean that the SFD drawing that proof I'm correctly done the calculation for the AIC. But at that time of the hearing, I don't have that all information. But I told them we have two scenarios about the AIC calculation. We have it to be 10,000 below 10,000. And the alleged, she said that it's supposed to be more than 16, and I have the proof right now. I was incorrect. I was correct, but the problem is, I didn't put the calculation on my drawing, and this is because I told them usually in all jurisdictions, anything below 10,000 AIC, they don't require to provide calculation for it. So my calculation was correct, and I have proof it. And I have the technical knowledge, and I'm confident to take the responsibility for signing electrical drawing.
Mr. Khalifa, why haven't you taken the electrical engineering exam and gotten your registration then?
Yeah, because I can take this exam. I can apply for the exam. But that's the code. The 32-128 of the board. They allow me, if I'm qualified and I have more than 33 years experience, I can practice the electrical engineer or any discipline.
Okay.
So the things about the calculation is incorrect right now. I'm just telling you that the IT is that I didn't do it correctly. I did it correctly. And also, according to the first hearing, the two engineers, they said the severity of this is one. So that something is not, that is, and they asked me about any technical question, I answer it. So that I have the technical knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Khalifa. That doesn't change my views on whether you should practice electrical engineering without registration, but I appreciate the input.
But the code, they allow me. I mean, that will let you guys change the code. ARS 32-128C4. And AAC R4-30-01-17. I don't want to do further investigation, but I can stop signing right now until get this exam. I want to practice any engineering engagement in state of Arizona until I get the PE exam.
Mr. Donald, I have a technical question. Since we've approved a motion here, we've got an action that we're going to take. Does the respondent have the opportunity to discuss this matter with you upon signing, or with staff upon the opportunity to sign the revised consent agreement?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the board has made a new offer. The board is
okay. Yeah.
But certainly, staff. As the board hasn't, I believe, hasn't voted this to complain this hearing, it may be more appropriate for staff to discuss it with the registrant. But certainly, if the board would like to direct that I be part of the conversation, it could be. The board certainly could.
Well, at this point, I think I would like you to be part of that conversation because the respondent is citing law and the application of law in his comments here. And I think when we make the new offer, it might be appropriate for him to make those, to have that discussion with you. How does everything he's doing fit the law in his opinion?
I do have to state, as board attorney, I can give board legal advice. I wouldn't be able to give the respondent legal advice on what he would be able to do.
Right, and I wouldn't expect that. But it sounds to me like he's making legal arguments about this, about what we're saying. I mean, he's citing ARS this and ARS that, and if he's got some type of information that would fit with that, would it be appropriate for you to accept that upon our new offer and maybe bring that back?
Certainly, I could. Well, and again, under board direction, I could certainly coordinate with board staff to assist them with whatever conversations they held with the registrar or with the respondent.
So if he has some legal argument about what his experience is or how his experience fits, he might be able to present that at that time. And I say that because he didn't have the opportunity to put this information in before we voted.
Certainly, or the board could rescind their motion and reopen the agenda item as well. If the board wanted to interact directly with the respondent right now, or if the board wanted to move forward, the board could again direct staff and the board's assistant attorney general to have a discussion.
I'm comfortable moving forward with it. I want to ensure that he has every opportunity to bring up whatever he needs to bring up as a respondent. Again, because of the telephonic arrangements and the craziness of the COVID environment that we all live in here, he didn't have the opportunity to speak while we were deliberating. So that's my concern. So if he has anything that he would, any legal arguments that he would bring up.
If Mr. Chair, if your concern is that he may not have had the opportunity to present his arguments to the board because of the telephonic issue, that would not be resolved by having board counsel talk to him afterwards, as this is an open meeting and that would be a private conversation with board staff and the respondent. So if there is something, I would advise that it probably would be more appropriate for the board chair to reopen the agenda item and allow the respondent to make any statements he would like to make to the board.
I don't think that that's necessarily my concern. My concern is that he keeps going back to legal citations and saying my experience fits this or that.
I don't mean to be difficult by a long shot, but I'm not sure I'd be able to determine if his experience met a statutory, if the board found the experience didn't meet a statutory definition, I could proceed with that, but I'm not qualified to make a determination independently about whether something meets a statutory requirement and then present that to the board. I wouldn't be able to do that.
Would you be qualified to carry information from him with an unsigned consent agreement that says this is why he didn't sign it?
It probably would be more appropriate for, if he didn't sign it, for him to appear at the next meeting and then directly address the board with any objections that he had.
Okay. At this point, I'll close the matter then. Thank you. That concludes the case. Thank you, Mr. Khalifa.
Staff. Thank you.
Okay. What do we have next?
6E1, I think.
What? Neil, is that correct?
We have a Derek Petrick for 6E1. We have a Ryan Halligan for 7F.
Well, we didn't do 6C1 yet either, but well, we got Alejandro here. I want him to address C and E.
Okay, so let's
see. But E is the most pressing because it requires board guidance.
Okay, so let's go to 6E1. Case number P21029, Derek Petrich. He's a PE, civil 64712. This is a complaint requiring board guidance. And this is, again, case number P21029. The respondent is Derek Petrich. He's PE 64172. The staff received a renewal application for his registration. On it, the respondent marked yes for question one. Respondent has been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor since his last renewal. His renewal date was 9/30/2017. He provided a sentencing order dated July 10th, 2018, in which he pled guilty to aggravated assault, a felony domestic violence offense. He neglected to provide a written response, so he was asked to provide one. A written response was received on August 20th. Is Mr. Petrich on the phone?
I am on the phone.
Okay, thank you for joining us, sir. Neil, do you have anything you want to start off with on this?
I just wanted Alejandro, because it's civil. What about Alejandro?
Okay.
Weigh in on this.
I would like to start off then by saying that I believe that the respondent complied with the application. He provided a written statement of the things that happened to him in the period of concern. He didn't handwrite them, apparently, but they were a copy of something from court. When he was asked to provide a written response, he went ahead and did that. So I think that he meets the standard. So addressing the issue of did he fill out the application right and submit and disclose his information, I think he met that standard. I'll open up the table or the floor for any further discussion on the matter.
Jason, I think you're right. I mean, I agree 100% with you. The question is, do we want to take any additional measures as a result of, the aggravated assault or not? I don't know. I could go either way. I could leave it where it's at, or we could do a consent agreement for a probation where, you know, if there are no further offenses after 18 months or whatever it is, it's clear, but if there's additional violent events in the future, then that could be a basis for revocation. I could go either way.
Dr. Angel, I think I could let this one rest. Reading the packet and the circumstances, I don't like them. It's just a bad situation all around. But I think that I don't. There's not a history of this. There were some character references in the packet that indicated something different at a different time and place in his life. So I'm willing to accept this as just the wrong place at the wrong time, bad situation, however you want to say it, and give this guy the opportunity to move on in life and get past this.
Sounds good.
So I don't think we need to take any action on this, do we?
Mr. Chair, you might want to hear from the respondent.
I'd like to say thank you to the board. That's the way they go. And like I said in my statement letter, this was a one-time mistake. It was unintentional, but it was my fault. And I've learned immensely from the circumstances and what I've gone through it and what happened. I'm very apologetic and sorry for it, and it will never happen again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking responsibility. At this point, I don't think we need a motion for anything.
Do you wish to dismiss the case?
Yes. Should we vote on that, Scott? Or
yeah, it probably should be a formal motion to dismiss the investigation.
Okay, so I move that we dismiss the investigation in the case.
Second.
Motion from Foos, second from Jones. Kirk?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foos.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes item 6E1. We will move on to item 6C1, complaint for offer of consent agreement. And the respondent is Alan Morris, PE Civil 31702. On July 16, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent provided professional services as an engineer in Florida without the benefit of Florida registration. Respondent fraudulently created a stamp for himself and sealed three final annual summary and recommendation reports while working for Arcadius U.S. Inc. on or about October 16, 2019. The respondent was fired from the firm, and the Florida Board of Professional Engineers issued him a cease and desist order. The staff recommendations are: offer proposed consent agreement encompassing the following order. If not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing. There's a letter of reprimand, probation of registration, administrative penalty in the amount of $4,000, cost of investigation of $310,000. The investigative conclusions were that he violated ARS 32128C4 as it relates to R430-3014, that he failed to comply with state, municipal, county laws, codes, ordinances, and regulations pertaining to his area of practice. It also concludes that he violated ARS 32128C4 and R430-3012, in that the respondent engaged in fraud, deceit, misrepresentation, concealment of material facts in advertising, soliciting, or providing professional services to the public. Respondent demonstrated a poor level of cooperation throughout the investigation and displayed no willingness to comply with the Board's Practice Act. Do we have the respondent on the phone?
I do not have him on my list.
Okay, so apparently we don't have a respondent. Mr. Morris, are you on the phone? Okay, I'll take that as no. If you are, please unmute yourself and announce your presence. I look at this. To me, this is just bad. I don't know. I mean, this is a bad thing. The penalty is kind of high compared to other things, but I think it's low for what he did. This is probably the worst thing in my mind a registrant can do. This is intentional. This is deceitful. It's everything bad. So
showed poor cooperation.
And showing poor cooperation. So
did he live in Arizona? He just got a stamp here.
I'm not sure.
No. He lives in Florida?
Oh. But he's registered here?
He's in Virginia by now, but he doesn't live in Arizona.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I agree with you. This is a terrible violation. But I also agree with what you said, that I think the penalty is high because he already paid a penalty in Florida, and this seems like it's piling on. I mean, if it's registered in 20 states, that he has to pay his penalty 20 times. So I think it makes sense for him to pay cost of investigation, to get a letter of reprimand, and to be on probation. But I don't know that I would impose any fine.
He hasn't cooperated at all with this investigation.
No.
He's had no contact with this board. He's been totally unresponsive to our investigators' requests for a contact and a response to these allegations. And that's reflected in this fine.
I think the fine is derived from his lack of cooperation with this board, not necessarily the things that occurred in Florida. Does that make sense, Dr. Okay. Angel?
That makes sense. That makes sense. But the question then becomes, what incentive does he have to sign it if this is as bad as, I mean, as the worst outcome if he went to hearing? Because we're applying the maximum penalty already.
Well, I think this demonstrates the board's ability to regulate this individual. That's kind of why, if it goes to hearing, he could be revoked.
Yeah,
but that might be necessary.
Yeah, give him 90 days. If he doesn't pay, it's we revoke.
We have 30 days to proceed according to the staff recommendation.
Oh, okay. All right.
I guess I'm okay with the recommendation at this point, with the understanding that the administrative penalty is based on his non-cooperation directly with this board, not necessarily the actions in Florida themselves.
Okay.
So, make a
motion there. I'm good with that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we offer this individual a proposed consent agreement encompassing the following: letter of reprimand, probation of registration, administrative penalty in the amount of $4,000, and the cost of investigation in the amount of $310 to be paid within 30 days, and if not, move to formal hearing.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion from Jones and a second from Gilmore. Kurt, roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
McAllister, aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes the matter of case P-2106, agenda item 61. I believe that we are caught up with our enforcement items. Is that correct?
Yes.
Everybody agree?
Yes.
Okay. We are going to hang on to Clarence as long as we can, Clarence, to get through this agenda. But please announce when you need to leave and leave whenever you have to. Make sense?
Will do. Thanks.
Okay. You bet. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Yes.
Can I make a motion that we grant licensure on cases 7A through 7F as recommended by the board, and that we grant the testing extensions recommended by staff in cases 7G, H, and I?
I believe you can, and I believe I'll second that.
I may ask, this is Ryan Halligan from 7I. I think there's a little bit more. I'm not asking for an extension. I was told that the board would review my case.
Sorry, background. You're right. Let's do 7A through
8H.
7G, I think, is the easier. Those are straightforward. 7A through 7G.
And H?
H is fine if he's requesting a six-month extension. I'm okay with that as well. So, yes, 7A through H.
Okay, so the motion is to consent 7A through H, and I second that motion. And if there's no discussion, we'll go on to the roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Motion's carried.
Okay, that concludes item 7A through H. Let's move to 7I. And Mr. Halligan, we have you on the phone, so I'll turn the floor over to you.
Once again, Mr. Halligan, this is Robert Stamm, the licensing manager. I'm just going to give a quick background on this, in case.
Oh, thank you, Rob.
So Mr. Halligan applied for registration as a civil engineer, and he has a bachelor's degree in environmental engineering, but passed the FE and then the civil PE. When he was evaluated, they determined that he was 11 months short because he was only given 36 months of credit for his education because it was in environmental engineering and not in civil. So Mr. Halligan provided me information showing that environmental and civil are fairly equivalent programs at NAU, and he would like it to be reviewed to see if he qualifies for civil. So I put on here that we can evaluate that, but if not, then I'd like to offer him an extension for 11 months. No.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Halligan.
Sure, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and the board, for reviewing my application for acceptance, and if not, for an extension. The reason why I wanted to talk to you all today is just because of how I think environmental engineering in general does meet the case of someone trying to reach their civil water PE, specifically at NAU. I provided Mr. Stamm the progression plan, so the actual specific classes you have to take for civil and environmental engineering, and every single class related to water resources engineering or anything, any water-related engineering classes are the same. So from that fact, I believe that I'm going to read the statute, AACR 430208A, subpoint F, and I can read exactly how that states. Engineering applicants with ABIT accredited bachelor's degree or equivalent in the branch of engineering that registration is sought with a semicolon 48 months. So from the fact that my actual education, the classes that I took, is equivalent to a civil engineering degree in which I am seeking my professional engineering as in civil water, I should be accounted for the 48 months of schooling that I took.
Mr. Halligan, this is Alejandro Angel. I don't think you're reading the statute the way it's intended to be read, because it says it's in the branch of engineering that you're seeking the registration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're seeking civil, and your degree is in environmental. And even though they share a lot of similarities, they're not the same. That's why, because of similarities, that's why you get 36 months of credit. But I guess another way to look at it is, if you went to NAU today and you said, hey, I want my degree in civil engineering as well, what do I need to do? I would assume you'd have to take some classes, right? They wouldn't give you a dual major right away, would they?
I guess it depends. I can reach out and ask them. My thought process is if I went and got an environmental engineering degree, which the reason I went there to do that was because they had all of the water-related classes, water and wastewater treatment. I'm assuming from all of the people in my company, their civil PEs is considered civil engineering. And to receive those classes, you have to take the environmental engineering degree. So that's the reason I chose environmental engineering, because I wanted to go into the water, wastewater, water resources portion of civil engineering, and that provided all of my classes. And the fact that if I had to take the water resources and environmental PE, which is, you know, they push those two together, that if NCEES requires you to have an environmental background as well as all of the water resources, then why wouldn't environmental engineering be just as equivalent as civil engineering for specifically the water resources PE? I'm not saying for the other PEs, you know, structural or transportation.
Yeah, but I think a civil license gives you breadth to practice civil engineering. And again, the rule talks specifically about an ABIT degree and
sure.
The branch that you're seeking. There's specific classes within civil engineering that ABIT requires for it to be a civil degree. So I understand what you're saying. I'm willing to bet that if you went to NAU, they wouldn't just say, yes, this is the same as the civil degree, or they wouldn't offer it as a separate degree. So unfortunately, I think it's a matter more of timing than anything else. So, I mean, at this point, you should be less than 8 months away if you applied in August.
Yeah, it should be as of next. Why? I again wanted to bring this up. So I have been in contact with the head of the department at NAU, and when I told them that what has pretty much happened thus far, they had never heard it before. They didn't know that that was an issue. So I kind of want to bring this up, not just for the case of me, but for the future people who are going to do the same thing. I know at least two people in my class who are also in the civil engineering field, you know, the drainage mm-hmm. water, that are seeking the civil water resources PE and seeking that registration that this will also affect. And I believe it will also affect the new ASU students that in 2017 they started their environmental engineering bachelor's. I just don't want this to occur to other people. You know, I don't want students to go in and say, oh, I can take this degree promo and it'll give me more classes and what I really want to do. And then they come to the board and say, nope, you have to go for another year. So I just wanted to bring this up to the board as in general. I will accept anything that you guys say. You guys are the board. But I, again, wanted to just bring it up for your discussion. And if you find that I need more experience or the extra time, then I will accept that. But thank you.
Understood. And I appreciate you bringing it up. But just reassurance that we have been applying this rule consistently between various disciplines of engineering for years. So it seems to me like it's more of a problem with the university if they're telling people that this will get them the equivalent of a civil engineering degree. Unfortunately, I think the rule was applied correctly when the evaluators looked at it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Dr. Angel, is it appropriate?
And Mr. Stram, I think, I would be more than happy to move that we keep the application open for a year to allow Mr. Halligan to get his registration when he has the required experience.
I'll second that motion. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Halligan, and good luck with your pursuit, and thanks for coming down and talking to us. Okay, the next item we have is the licensing consent agenda, and review, consideration, action on staff recommendations, cancellation. So let's have a look at the cancellation list. I believe we have to approve this one.
You do, and it's extensive. We skipped it last month, and if I recall, some of the controlling person and alarm agent cancellations were missed because of the changes in the law where we now have a 3-year renewal. I did basically incorrect math about 3 or 4 months ago and did not include everyone that I should have, and I've corrected that for this time around, as well as a single home inspector who, for some reason, fell off the thing and he needed to be canceled. And that was brought up to me by Mr. Pacino when his bond or EO has expired.
Okay, looking for a motion.
Chuck, make a motion that we accept the staff recommendation for the cancellation list.
Second. Okay, motion from Gilmore, second from Jones. Roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Jason Foose?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, that concludes 8A1, 8A2. I trust we've all reviewed the list in our packet.
Yep.
Without any objections, we'll close that item and move on to item 9, policy matters. And I believe this would be Melissa's turn to talk. Melissa, are you there?
She is, but she's muted. I know.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Yeah.
Wait, can you hear me? Okay. There are barking dogs. I apologize. So, we need to vote on board meeting dates and election of officers and supplemental proposed rulemaking before we lose our
wow. How do you live with that all day?
It's a challenge.
Oh, day long.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
So I've got rough, 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 rough.
Right. And the bug guy just appeared out back. Oh. So, anyway. We just wanted you to see the recognition we have of Patty and Eugene's contributions. So, I don't think that the holiday party is going to work this year because of COVID issues and concerns about, groups more than 10.
Would you give him the phone, please?
I tried bribing you guys. I apologize. Okay, so what do you want to do first? Supplemental proposed rulemaking?
Yes. Go in another room for acoustic purposes.
Sorry, I'm just going to mute her real quick. I think she was just saying, what do you guys want to go for? The supplemental proposed rulemaking and the board meeting dates and election of officers seems to be high on the list of needs to be voted on.
No holiday party.
But, no holiday party.
Well, I move we Bummer. Move ahead with the supplemental proposed rulemaking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you guys like them, and should we send them to McGurk?
I'm good moving forward with them. Does anybody have any objections to them?
No, we've discussed them before, so I'm comfortable sending it to Gert.
Yep. All
right. So,
okay, I apologize for that. I just have a quick question for the record. You reviewed the comments, correct?
Reviewed the what?
Comments.
The comments that we got on our proposed rulemaking.
Oh, yes. 3-1-4.
Right. As long as you can say on the record that you don't think we need to make any changes, I think we're okay sending it to GERC.
Okay. I believe we discussed this while you were offline. Yeah, we would encourage you to send it to GERC. There were no objections.
Thank you.
Okay.
Does that have to be a motion, or is that just direction?
I think it's just direction.
Okay.
I prefer a motion, guys. A motion would be helpful.
Okay, I move we send it to GERC.
Second.
And Gilmore seconds. Roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, motion carried. The next big item on here was election of officers. Melissa, do you have anything you want to add to that? Are you there?
I am here, and we would need nominations and votes. So, whoever is interested, unless you want to push this to December to see if Andy and Carmen want to take part.
Because they're not off the board. No. So this would be the time. This would be the time to vote them in.
Governor.
This would be the time to vote them in when they're not here.
Oh.
Gotcha. I'm good with December. Let's see what they feel, and just move ahead. Hang out till December. The holiday party's off due to COVID. Board meeting dates for 2021. Is that a big mystery that it's always going to be the fourth Thursday of the month, except November? Fourth Tuesday, rather. I think we'll proceed ahead under that assumption.
I think you have to make a motion on that we those will be the days.
Okay, I move that we set our board meetings for 2021 at the fourth Tuesday of every month, except for November.
Second.
Motion by Foose, second by Gilmore. Roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Jason Foose.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll. Is that an aye?
Can only vote once.
That's an aye.
Okay. Motion carried.
Okay. The remaining item on policy matters is a recognition of Patty and Gene. I can't say enough good about either both of those guys. You know, we're going to have to do something. Patty was just invaluable to this board with everything she did.
Yep.
and just a positive, pleasant, nice person to interact with and engage with. And Gene the same. What a gentleman. Just a valuable addition to this board, especially his experience out at Palo Verde, serving the customers of the state and his area of expertise there. So both of those people are just tops in my book.
Sorely missed.
Definitely. We have the Mills versus Arizona Board of Technical Registration, and I believe that we're going to defer any action on that till next.
This, my call-in list is a little incorrect. That should be 9Gs, the question proposed by Mr. Gary Lasham.
Are you on the phone?
Gary, are you on the phone?
How about Mr. Steve Boshin?
So I am present, guys.
Todd Emery? Bill Fay?
Can you guys hear me?
We've got 10 minutes to take any action, so we probably ought to jump up to the question from Mr. Lashen.
I informed Mr. Lashen in two emails that we will be talking about this. Mr. Angel had asked questions at the last board meeting. I proposed those questions to Mr. Lashen. He did not answer them via email. And then ADOA had said that they would like to discuss it or at least answer questions, and so we have them on the phone, but again, Mr. Lasham has not indicated that he would be on this call. So
I'm not sure that I understand the whole question itself, but
I'm with you, Mr. Chair. That was my question, is what specifically is he objecting to, and what statute or rule, if you're thinking it's problematic. I wasn't clear on it.
And he does mention revisions on the drawings. I've never experienced a problem with this between the public red lines I see at the county in our transportation organization or the city that we work with. Or actually ADOT that's across the street from me that I go trade records with. So I haven't really seen any kind of abrasion with this. One thing that I would point out is if I'm faced with a conflict between a higher standard and a lower standard, I think as a professional, my simple answer is go to the higher standard. So if there is a conflict, it seems to be resolvable right on the paper or right at the incident. So I'm not really fully understanding this.
Well, there's a reference here, only the record drawings need to be stamped. Record drawings mean as-built. Well, those the record drawings are the final approved set as the record.
Well, after the project's complete, I mean, they are the record drawing, right? I mean,
with revisions, with all the corrections, clouds, yeah. But up to that point, it implies then maybe it doesn't have to be stamped. Only the record drawings are stamped. Maybe that's the confusion.
Oh. You want to ask Mr. Boshin from ADOA his thoughts?
Sure. Let's turn the floor over to him.
He's muted.
So, board members, thank you for hearing me today. And it is ADOT. I don't want to work for ADOA.
My apologies. I talk to them too often. I'm sorry.
Sorry to hear that. So the complaint, I did see the dilemma you guys are seeing where they only require the record drawings to be stamped on the cover. I want to make a statement of fact that is incorrect. We do not require a sealed drawing for the record drawings. If there are substantial changes during construction, we do have the engineer of record restamp those drawings. If we change a culvert from 80 feet to 82 feet, that's considered a red line by the resident engineer, and that is made a part of the red line drawings that become a record drawing. So that's really our process. I did look at the statutes, and I don't see any conflict between the three that are in ARS, and there is no conflict in your substantive policy 1 and 7. But that's more the plan review check process. That has nothing to do with what we're doing under construction. and then dating and signing seals and revisions to drawings. Again, that is during construction for substantive, you know, changes that we make. Let's say we move a bridge 10 feet. Yeah, you know, we're going to have by engineer record reseal those drawings, et cetera. So we don't see the conflict here, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Steve, have you talked to Gary Lasham about any of this? Have you had any direct interaction with him on the matter?
So, board chair and board members, we have not. The name sounds familiar, but I am not familiar with any interactions on this matter.
I wonder if just direct outreach between you and he, or your agency and he, might clarify some of his concerns, because they really don't seem to rise to any level of technical issue for us. I mean, at least I don't see anything. Alejandro, do you see anything?
I don't see any problem. I think, I mean, the only thing we say is that you know, sheets need to be sealed, and they already are during the design, and they reseal if there's substantive changes. Otherwise, it's just a red line, as Mr. Boshin said. So, unless we hear something specific from Mr. Lasham, I'm comfortable that I haven't seen any issues.
So, Alejandro, this is Neil. So, you're talking about minor. So, you have a set of drawings, and there's some couple of red lines. We're okay with that, right? But if there's substantive changes to the drawings, that's a different deal.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I mean, on a project we did recently with ADOT, they discovered during construction that a culvert was, you know, too old and deteriorated to work with, so they decided to replace it and do new junction structures. They had somebody else seal those sheets because that was a substantive change. Then at the end of the job, we sealed the, or we didn't seal, we reviewed the red lines from the RE for everything else and just concurred with those.
So I don't see any action for us to take on this. And just adding to what Alejandro said, I mean, when I go out and do red line items, it's the manhole rim.
Yeah.
Was supposed to be at 89.9, and I measured it at 89.5 or something, just to tell them what they're working with. Not a big change, just to do that. So I don't see any issue or any action on our part. I'm comfortable closing this item out, and would like to thank Steve for donating his time and the cause here.
I apologize, but I think Clarence just dropped off, and I think that this ends the meeting.
He can't just drop off.
He may have, and that's okay. It was 2 o'clock.
It's not 2. It's 1 minute till.
Well,
that drops us below the quorum to 5.
That's the number. So we...
It's 11
with the vacancies.
But this was not an enforcement action. This was just, item for discussion, right? So we don't necessarily need to take any action. There's no complaints, I don't think.
That's correct. So as long as there's no action,
Hold on.
Melissa, Dr. Angel, hold it. I hate to have to do this, but if Clarence McAllister has dropped off the call, then, yeah, we're out of order right now. The meeting, anything we continue with is going to be in violation of open meeting law. So we're automatically done if Clarence is no longer on the call.
Yep, we're adjourned, everybody. Yeah. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank
and sorry
you,
for the barking dogs.
Thank you.
Yeah, that wasted 15 minutes.
Bye, everybody.